Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. We are loaded on a Tuesday. We have Real Sports live in Los Angeles. This show is called The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, it is great to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining me. Everybody from comedian Bill Burr to Bruce Feldman, college football. Urban Meyer stops by today. Jason Light, the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's got a new quarterback named Tom Brady. Maybe you've heard of him. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. There's a lot going on this morning.
There is. I don't think I'm a guy with an agenda. I can pick both sides. I voted for both parties for president. I'm not a big agenda guy. I'm kind of an independent guy. So I see this morning. Nick Saban comes out and says, players aren't going to catch the virus in the football field. They're going to catch it on a campus. He goes on to say, we've been testing all summer. We have a 2% positive ratio on our team since the 4th of July. He goes, it's a lot higher than that in society. You can get it if you play football. You can get it if you're at a bar. You can get it at a beach. You can get it hanging out. Of course, Nick Saban is right. Here's also some data that is in, and this is not disputable. Athletes in bubbles, athletes in semi-bubbles, athletes on Team in America, any team, college or pro, have a significantly lower shot of getting COVID. Those are not disputable. If you want to argue it, you've got an agenda. This is not what I have. So far, if you do catch it as an athlete, the death rate is zero. You are now safer with your pro team in a bubble. That is not disputable. Nobody even tests positive in a bubble. And now you're also safer statistically in a university semi-bubble. I looked at all the stats this morning. Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama. Even baseball gets criticized. They've had 13,000 tests. 0.1 have been positive. Oh, we're freaking out. That's the crisis sport, baseball. 13,000 tests, 0.1% positive. We live in a country now where we pick and choose what we can do. Airlines, 250 seats, American Airlines, all sold, jammed together, five-hour flight. I don't see you going on Twitter screaming about that. You can eat inside and outside, restaurants all over America. You are fighting for your right to do that. I ate inside a restaurant in Park City, Utah this weekend. I'm going to eat outside in one tonight. And I'm fighting for my right to do it. You can go to the beach anywhere in America, sit right next to somebody with no mask. And you're fighting for your right to do it. But yet I'm outraged by kids in a semi-bubble with doctors everywhere playing college football. I'm not. 13 Big Ten campuses are allowing students on campus without the supervision of doctors and getting tested four times a week. Nick Saban said yesterday, our kids can be tested every day if they want to be. Every single day. I go to the grocery store. That lady at the checkout or that guy, they're not getting tested every day. The players in college football are getting tested three times a week. Now, yesterday there was great concern, and this is a real issue, right? A rare heart condition has surfaced called myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. And I'm going to read you this verbatim. The condition is usually caused by viral infections, including the common cold, influenza, and mono. For the record, anybody with a college student knows mono is everywhere in a college campus. Everywhere. And you can catch it from COVID. The story continues, left undiagnosed and untreated, it could cause heart damage. But there's a reason when I don't feel well, I go to a doctor and not an architect. Because doctors diagnose and treat. And if you're a college kid and get it, and you can get it anywhere in America, you've got a better chance if you're a college athlete surrounded by testing and doctors to get it diagnosed early and treated. That's why we go to doctors. Once a year, I feel sick. Maybe once every 2 years. I go to a doctor. He diagnoses something and then treats it. I am not saying this shouldn't be of concern. What I'm saying is we've got numbers now. It is safer to be on a college campus as an athlete surrounded by tests and protocol and doctors and supervisors. I told you yesterday, I have a college daughter. I'd much rather she live with volleyball players getting tested than the people she lives with now, boyfriends who I don't trust at 20 years old to wear masks and socially distance. In college athletics, you have to do both. They'll make you wear a mask, they'll test you every day, and there'll be social distancing. But it's funny in America now, we're just picking and choosing what we're outraged by. Airlines are packed. You would call the airline and scream if they wouldn't let you fly and see your mom. Restaurants are jammed where I live, and you'd fight and yell and scream when they're not open. Beaches, you're taking away my freedoms. People are next to each other all over. I can't figure out why you can put people in a tube at 33,000 feet for 5 hours. Joy was on one of these planes. But you can't go to a Dodger game? What? And have 6,000, 8,000 people in a vast stadium wearing masks? I mean, I don't understand it. I'm lost on this. And I would be concerned, too. I support any program or player that wants to opt out. This is not some dogma that you have to play. But we've got data now. These sports are working. The bubble sports are unbelievable. Hockey's at a billion tests, no positive. NBA's been unbelievable. Lou Williams likes an occasional chicken wing. Give the guy a break. Don't label him for life. I mean, and in these college numbers, I'm looking at Ohio State's, Michigan's, Alabama. I'm looking at all of them today. Texas, USC. There's doctors everywhere. They're vetted everywhere. They don't want to be sued. So I hope we have college football. I doubt it. I think there's just liability and lawyers now are running this. But I think you have an agenda. If you think a college kid is safer on a campus, non-athletic kid than an athlete, I think the athlete's much safer. I don't even think it's arguable. I'm looking at all the numbers. You're not getting tested six times a week as a chemistry major. You are as a football player. All right. Lakers last night. Whew, beat Denver. Gutty performance. This is one for the ages. This will go down in Laker lore as one of the all-timers. Here's how it ended.
LeBron to inbound. Vince Diop is on him. Anthony Davis picked up by Bull. Here comes Kuzma for the win. Got it! Point four to go. They got the lead. Timeout Denver. 124-121. What a shot by Kyle Kuzma.
Yes, Kyle Kuzma and the Lakers starters, including LeBron, that played the entire fourth quarter, eked out a win over Denver that didn't play any of their starters at all in the fourth quarter. Whew. Even after that game, the Lakers are still last in three-point percentage, last in field goal percentage, and last in points in the bubble. Last. That is with LeBron James. That is with Anthony Davis. That would be like having five kids, two of your daughters are supermodels, and you still got voted the ugliest family. How homely would your sons have to be? Folks, if you have LeBron and AD and you're last in the bubble offensively, what does that tell you about the rest of the cast? You know, for years and years, LeBron James in the East, there would be these fool's gold number one seeds. Remember Toronto and Atlanta and Derrick Rose in Chicago and Roy Hibbert and the Pacers, and they would be number one seeds and LeBron would come in and whack them. They were fool's gold. The difference is now LeBron went west and he's on the number one seed that's fool's gold. I am picking Portland to beat the Lakers. The Lakers cannot defend the three. Last night, Denver shot 57% on threes, did not miss any in the fourth. Denver's backups did not miss any in the fourth. If you can't shoot the three and you can't defend the three, you can't beat Portland. Gary Trent Jr., Dame, CJ McCollum, equal size. Why is everybody afraid to say this? LeBron knows it. I mean, LeBron was saying after Kuzma's shot last night, listen carefully to LeBron.
In order for us to win a championship, he has to be our third best player. And if I'm struggling or if AD's struggling, he has to be our second best player, you know, any given night. I mean, it's just, you know, we can't win a championship if Kuz doesn't play well.
And Kuz doesn't play well every third game. Listen, I live in Los Angeles. People look at me, I can see it. Why are you so down on the Lakers? I'm not down on the Clippers. I'm not down on the Dodgers. I'm not down on LAFC. If I talked hockey, I wouldn't be down on the Kings. I'm down on this Laker team. I think they're a fool's gold number one. I think they kept their starters in last night to prove a point against Denver. They need wins. They need confidence. Because I don't think LeBron, outside of AD, trusts any. A-N-Y, caps, all caps, any of his teammates to be that third star.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So, Joy, I'm going to make NFL standing prediction.
Yes.
Now, I always do this. I wait for the coaching changes, the combine, the draft, free agency, and then I make a prediction. I did that May. But things have changed. Now we've had opt-outs, no OTAs, no preseason, and so I'm going to make another prediction. Now, I have a right to amend this before the season starts. I have 30 days. The Constitution in this country has amendments, like 26 of them. I get one. So, because I'm going to wait for injuries, if there's any injuries.
So you're only allowing yourself one amendment?
One
phase of amendments?
I think one amendment. But okay. Again, the Constitution.
Last year, I think got to 7 amendments. So you're kind of cornering yourself here.
Okay,
yeah, one might be a little limited.
Let me defend myself. The Constitution has 26 amendments. I could be wrong. It has 27 amendments. Alex, 27 amendments. The Constitution. I don't get a second.
You can have as many as you want.
Yeah, you can have as many, but if you say I only get one,
that freedom of speech one needs to be
no
amended
rules.
So you don't talk back. All right, here we go. So I'm very excited. Now, this is what I believe is going to happen this year. Joy and I have talked about this. Her brother, of course, Hall of Famer. She's been watching football games forever. I think the good teams are going to be really good and dominant, and I think the bad teams are going to be trash. I just think if you have a new staff and a new quarterback, no OTAs, you're going to get rolled. They're going to be some bad, bad teams this year. And it doesn't mean their players are bad. This is just awful.
It's a bad situation for anyone who has to implement anything new.
And the good teams that bring everybody back and have just added smart veteran players are going to be unbelievable. We had this in remember the strike-shortened season where the good teams were really good and the bad were really bad? So here we go. Let's start with the AFC. AFC East. Buffalo, I had them earlier about 9 wins. I'm going to give them 11. They've added Stephon Diggs. They've had a couple of opt-outs, a defensive lineman, a corner. They're deep on defense. Miami's one of the toughest teams for me because I really like where they're going. But God, they needed a preseason. They really needed a preseason. So I've got them at 7-9. I think if they had a preseason, Tua would start. They don't have a preseason. I don't think Tua will start. I think they'll find their magic about week 5 or 6. Jets, CJ Mosley opted out. Jamal Adams is gone. They're just not going to be good enough in an improved division. And again, New England's 5-11. 8 opt-out players. Cam is sharing snaps. No preseason for Cam sharing snaps. No deep threat. No functioning tight end. Dante Scarnecchia, best O-line coach in 20 years, retires. I think we all know why New England will be 5-11. AFC North. I've got courage. Baltimore's going to roll. They're going to destroy people. 13 of their 16 games, they're going to bulldoze people. They have the NFL's easiest travel schedule, and I think the NFL's best roster. Cleveland worries me with Kevin Stefanski, but I love their talent. I think Cleveland probably starts to roll about mid-October. Pump the brakes on Brown's criticism. New coach, new staff. They're going to be a run-first football team, fingers crossed. Pittsburgh, again, I would love to see a preseason with Big Ben. They don't get one, and I don't buy them right now. I don't like their direction, though I love their front 7. Cincinnati, I thought, could win 5 or 6. They're going to get rolled. They're going to be bad. They just don't. I saw the Joe Burrow footage yesterday. The ball didn't have any zip on it. Very concerned. Accuracy issues. The ball was very low. Did not like the 45 seconds of Joe Burrow footage yesterday. And I watched that and I thought, what am I doing? He's not lining up against the Ravens, Browns, and Steelers defenses. I'm sorry. It's going to be a total mismatch. And that's nothing against Joe Burrow. They're going to be awful. All right, AFC South. A bunch of average and a horrible Jaguars team. Again, Jaguars got no players. They're clearly targeting next year. I think the Colts have the best young offensive line in football, and that will allow immobile Phillip Rivers to succeed. I also loved their first three draft picks, or their first two draft picks, Michael Pittman from USC, Jonathan Taylor running back at Wisconsin. Now, I don't think Phillip Rivers is athletic. In fact, I think he's the least athletic quarterback in the league, and I think there are some limitations in 2020. The good teams can move the pocket, or you're like Tampa, where you have superstars everywhere. So I think the Colts win a average division. I think Tannehill pulls back. There you go. AFC West, this division's absolutely loaded. I even think the Raiders are fun, but I think they're going to be over their skis. Teams that move cities are usually bad the first year. I think Kansas City's going to win 12. I had Denver being a very good team this year, and I think they're improved. Here's what worries me. They got a left tackle issue, and the right tackle opted out. That's Cleveland last year. Cleveland had a lot of good players. They were atrocious at tackle, and Cleveland couldn't protect Baker Mayfield running for his life. So I get Drew Lock with a bad left tackle who's underachieved and a right tackle who opted out. That worries me a ton, but I still have him at 9-7. Chargers are a very competitive 8-8. Tyrod Taylor is a functioning starting quarterback. New stadium, same coach. I like him. I just think in an improved AFC, there's a ceiling with the team. Raiders 5-11. So my AFC playoffs, Bills, Ravens, Colts, Chiefs are division winners. Broncos, Browns, Chargers are playoff teams. Yes, I do think Kansas City, Denver, and the Chargers all make the playoffs from the AFC West. NFL football, arguably, I really do think it's the best division in football. Now let's go to the NFC. I'm going to have Philadelphia winning it. Dallas has a new coach. They're not going to be bad. They could go 9-7, but I have 8-8. I think the Giants, there are some things about the Giants I like. Daniel Jones better than I thought. Saquon Barkley, they've upgraded the O-line. I think New York's going to be but I got a new coach. But they're another team. If the Giants had a preseason and you gave me a look at them, I'd like them a lot more. The Washington football team, going to be, I just think they're going to be bad. I think they'll be really intense. But again, how bad did Dwayne Haskins need a preseason? Like Washington's won it like Miami. Like, there's players with Washington. There are players with Miami. Devastating. Devastating for Washington with a new coach, quarterback with very few starts, no preseason. NFC North, I think it's going to be a very good division. I don't like Detroit like everybody else. A lot of people think Detroit's sneaky. I'm going to have Minnesota and Green Bay at 11-5. Again, I got some issues with Green Bay, but I Aaron Rodgers, star offensive players. I think Minnesota's roster is excellent. I think Minnesota's front office is excellent. Mike Zimmer's a little rigid for me on the offensive end. But Kirk Cousins, as much as we bag on him, is pretty proficient. Chicago's in a little bit of a quarterback transition stage. That's how I see it. And in the NFC South, Saints, Bucks, Panthers, Falcons. I think the Falcons are a bit of a mess. I think they may bail on their head coach, who's in a lame duck year halfway through the season. Carolina 7-9, but fighter's chance, they blow somebody's season up. I think the Saints are the best team, and I think Tampa Bay takes about 6 weeks to get their act together. Really could have used a preseason, didn't have one. Their defense, my prediction is Tampa's defense will actually be the story the first 6 weeks of the year. We'll be talking about their defense. NFC West, second to best division in football. I got the Niners winning at 12-4. I had Seattle better than this. Pull back a little bit. Organization that I think is a little top heavy. Rams are good at 9-7, but like Seattle, they're kind of like Seattle to me. Some stars top heavy, some thin spots. They just don't have the quarterback Seattle does. And Arizona's a competitive 5-11, but still young and a lot of changes. The NFC playoffs look exactly like last year's. The difference is Tom Brady's in. Eagles, Vikings, Saints, Niners, the wild card teams. I think Minnesota would tie with Green Bay but win the division. Packers, Bucks, and Seahawks.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the
iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Jason Light played football at Nebraska, and then he got into football and personnel and scouting. He is the general manager now in his seventh year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I've been saying this for the last couple. It's not a talent issue. They don't have the quarterback right quite yet, but they got all sorts of players, and he is joining us via the Cowherd Global Satellite Network. So, you know, what's interesting about this, Jason, is that people think, oh, there's all this change. You actually return 19 starters, which I think is first or second in the NFL. So you guys have not had a lot of flux. You're young, but when I look at your team this year, my only question, it's not your defense, it's not your personnel. My question is, take the old guy, put him up with the new kids, and figure out the offensive system together. So how has Brady looked so far, Jason?
He's looked great. You know, we haven't put pads on yet. We haven't even gone offense versus defense in walkthroughs. You know, that's coming up this week. But there's definitely a different aura to practice. There's just a different feel. It's very efficient. The players are gravitating to him like you would expect. I was, you know, in New England for 6 years when he was the quarterback. So I'm not as in awe as a lot of other people here that haven't been around him. Don't get me wrong. I'm still in awe of him. I mean, he is the best of all time. So, but it's just a different feel. But we're taking it one day at a time here. We all know we have a lot of work to do before we kick off here in a little over a month.
You know, it's interesting when I don't even think I've heard the story on this. So there had to have been a moment where you and Bruce Arians were, you know, it's a day in the off season, and you had to have a moment where you said, you know, Coach, I was up there in New England. I have Tom's number. Maybe I can make a little text to Tom. Do you remember the moment when it really you thought to yourself, I think we have a shot here. We may be in the hunt here for Brady.
Well, it seems like it was 5 years ago now because we've been through a lot here, all of us in the world here the last few months. But it really never came down until the moment that we could call the agent. We couldn't talk to the players yet in free agency, but the legal tampering period, which is an oxymoron, but where, you know, we didn't get an answer, but the first call I made to Don Yee, he said, you made the right call. And
wow,
I thought at that moment that was a good sign. Now, I didn't know if he was saying that to any other teams that were calling him, but it wasn't until we were able to talk to Tom. I went over to Bruce's house, called him, and he answered, and he said, what's up, big guy? I'm very excited. And I remember looking at Bruce going, I don't know what this means. Does he mean that he's excited to join a new team or joining us? So the call went well. He still hadn't signed until, you know, the following day. So I wasn't going to start, you know, doing cartwheels until, it, you know, the ink dried. But, you know, that was really the moment. There was a lot of sleepless nights leading up to it. And, it was crazy that we're, you know, kind of in this. And that was when the uncertainty started. You know, he was just coming to grasp with what we're going through with the pandemic. At that moment that, you know, after he signed, we would have normally probably rented out a restaurant and had a party. But, you know, it was just kind of a surreal time. But it was a great thing to happen during those times to keep our minds, you know, off of everything else that was going on just for a moment.
You know, it's funny. You had the world's best secret in the entire world. You had the world's best secret and you couldn't tell anybody. Did you even tell your wife? Did you even go home and say, honey, you can't tell anybody, but we're going to get Tom Brady here. How did you keep it secret?
Well, in today's day and age, it was the free agent bell hit, so you know everybody was after the story, and I think it pretty much was out simultaneously. But she knew that that's what the desire that Bruce and I and our organization wanted for a while, but she was told not to tell anybody that that's what we were hoping to do.
Yeah. You know, when I looked at your team, it's one of those things where when Tom chose you, we all went on this show. Oh, yeah, this makes total sense. Yeah. This makes sense. The receivers, he got tired of kind of a lack of firepower, and Tampa's got all sorts of firepower. So, but the untold story of your team is that your defense was great down the stretch. And I'm a huge fan of Todd Bowles. I thought he was very good in New York, but he may be a coordinator more than a coach. I don't know. I don't know. But let's talk a little bit about that, is that the offense will get all the discussion. You have one of the best young linebacking corps in football. Talk about how you played last year late on the other side of the ball.
We took some lumps early in the year. We had a very young secondary. And first of all, to back up, you're right. Todd Bowles is an incredible coach. I think he's going to be a great head coach again someday. But he's an incredible coach. We have an incredible, we have an A-plus coaching staff. Bruce has put together an all-star staff here, and they're just incredible to work with. But we struggled a little bit early. Todd put and his staff put in extra time with these young guys. I think it was the secondary. They finally started to click. They finally started to get it. These were young guys. And at the second half of the year, I was driving to the stadium looking forward to watching this defense. And there have been a few years that I wouldn't be able to say the same thing. So I think they're only going to get better this year. They have a lot. We have a lot of talent, like you said, but we have a great coaching staff, and we have a great vision for what we're going to do this year.
One of the things I've been concerned about is as you get older, 43 years old for Tom, you're dealing with 21-year-olds. They listen to different music. They're on different platforms. Tom's done a very good job to stay young. And I thought it was interesting when you brought Gronk in, because you're certainly not short of tight ends. You probably have the best tight end combo in the NFL. Is Gronk more of a chemistry piece? How do you view Gronk on this roster?
Well, we love OJ. We think Cam's a heck of a player. We got a couple other young guys that we like, a few other young guys that we like as well. But we do know that Tom likes Gronk. We didn't sign him or trade for him just because of that. But we know, you know, your tight end is usually your quarterback's best friend. So if you can actually get the quarterback's best friend and bring in a tight end, and you probably have a better chance of things working out. But you know, you can't have too many great players. This is, we love OJ, we love Cam, we love, like I said, the other young guys too. I think we're going to find a way to get them all into the offense, and you know, I think Tom's up for the task.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is obviously COVID makes it difficult, but I was saying yesterday is that the NFL is equipped to handle this. You can kind of create a semi-bubble, not an NHL bubble, but a semi-bubble. Is that how it kind of feels, that it's you've got some parameters here that are fairly rigid and that you'll get through it? Are you optimistic today?
I am optimistic, very optimistic. It's been working for us. I know it's been working for a lot of other teams too. I know that the accountability that Bruce has been preaching to our players, don't let one person bring this down. They all see that this could be a very exciting year for us. They don't want to be the person that does it, that brings it down. Everybody's very vigilant here about wearing their masks, social distancing when you have to, and Bruce preaches it every day. So when it's coming from the top, and nobody wants to give this virus to any of our players, but we certainly don't want to give it to our coaches either. So it's right now, I've been very pleased with the work that our staff has done putting this, our quasi bubble together. So like I said, I'm looking forward to kicking off here in a little over a month.
I imagine merchandise sales have been pretty strong. Your ownership group should be pretty, the Glazers should be pretty happy. Just off the top of your head, merchandise sales for the Buccaneers. Let me guess, they're up.
Yeah, probably a little bit. I had to buy a bunch of jerseys myself for family members, so I imagine that they are up. Imagine they are
good.
Tom Brady raises the accountability level of everybody in the organization.
Yeah, Jason, great seeing you. You've done a remarkable job. Couldn't be happier for you. I lived there for a couple of years. A great NFL city, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
I appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So one of the things, I've always had this theory on Boston people. So Boston people just become successful because they've got an edge to them. Dana White's a Boston guy. He got a lot of, UFC got a lot of crap. That was not an easy success story. Bill Simmons, Dave Portnoy at Barstool gets a lot of crap. Bill Burr's a Boston guy. Boston guys have an edge, and they're, you know, sometimes they're not the most elegant in the way they present themselves, but they're tough guys.
Very unapologetic.
They're unapologetic. Maybe it's because, you know, they grew up not far from, you know, Plymouth Rock. They think they own the place. And I don't know what it is about Boston guys, but Bill Burr is the voice of Boston and America. He's common sense. He's smart. He's a great comedian. He was just in The King of Staten Island. It's now available on digital Blu-ray, and he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So let's start with that. What is it about Boston guys and Dana White and Simmons?
Can we start by saying I am not the voice of Boston?
Okay.
I grew up in the suburbs. I'm not as tough as the guys, at least the Boston I remember. I don't know what Boston's like now. I left like 25 years ago.
So yeah.
I am the voice of safe suburban, the safe suburbs.
Okay.
South of Boston.
Okay, that's fair enough. So Joy's got Joy has the first question because you're in this movie, and Joy has a question for you. I have not seen it yet. My daughter has. Joy has. So what's the question?
So Bill, we have a lot of hair conversations on this show, and you have a pretty glorious mustache in this movie, which is very funny, by the way. Did you grow that? Because that would be very impressive. Or is this a?
Yes, I did.
You grew that mustache.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't shave for a couple of months. The great Judd Apatow said, all right, what are we going to do? You're playing a firefighter. You know, what I learned on the movies, you can't have a beard when you're a firefighter because it's, you know, you need the seal for the mask. So we were trying to think, you know, grow the hair out a little bit, do the horseshoe thing. I was like, you know, so then I just said, listen, I think the shaved head's going to look cool. Because I saw what the other people looked like. They all had hair. It'd be something different. And then just grew a beard. And hair and makeup sort of were like, what kind of mustache do you want? And I go, all right, I think this guy's probably like an old school guy. So
yeah.
He'll have like more of a... I mean, no firemen really have a mustache. I don't think like that. So it was a little ridiculous.
It
was a compliment.
By the way, another Boston guy is Dennis Leary. He's another guy with an edge. You know, these guys are all quick. They're now. Let me ask you this: as a Boston.
Yeah. Now Dennis is from real Boston. He's from Charlestown.
Yeah, the fighters.
Which I'm sure is now like all condos and stuff like that. But back in the day, it was like all bank robbers and Dennis and Tony V.
So, as a Boston guy, if Brady goes to Tampa and wins a Super Bowl, would you be bitter?
I absolutely love this question. Because every non-Patriots fan has been asking me this, and I can just really see how much this guy has broken your hearts. It's really a testament to how great he is. I absolutely would not be brokenhearted. He put us on the map. We were a joke. I can't say a total joke because we had Drew Bledsoe and Bill Parcells before then. But, like, you know, we used to play. It looked like a high school football stadium, aluminum seats. He took us to 9, and we won 6. You can't complain. And what I love is if he wins in Tampa, he'll do what a lot of great quarterbacks have never been able to do, is go to that next team. You know, Joe Namath with the Rams, Johnny Unitas with Chicago, and on and on and on. I'm sorry, with San Diego. If he does this, I think it would be a great thing because I know he's a huge fan of Joe Montana, and Joe Montana went to Kansas City, immediately made them a playoff team, but wasn't able to get them a championship. And if he wins it, I just want to know, what is Jim Irsay and the Colts going to say? How are they going to say he underhandedly beat him this time? So I would absolutely love it. Of course, I'm rooting for the Patriots, but if the Patriots don't make it with Cam Newton, which I think we got as good a chance as anybody, I would love to see Tom Brady go up against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, sort of the next guy who's already arrived with his title. I would love to see that that matchup. I mean, that, I think that would be an incredible Super Bowl. But I am not bitter at all. In the last 20 years, I got to see all four of my sports teams win a championship. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I would have thought I would see the Red Sox win a World Series before I ever saw the Patriots win a Super Bowl. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't even feel like we were even in the league. We just, you know, we just had guys, you know, on work release from prison, plowing the field to give us a field goal. Our fans took the goalpost out of the stadium and got electrocuted on some wires. Somebody stabbed the police horse. We were like banned from Monday Night Football. The razor blade guy buys our team, and then, you know, somebody takes their towel off in front of a woman reporter. It was we were a joke. It was like it was an S show until obviously Parcells and Drew Bledsoe. I'm not trying to discredit what they did, but like ever since Bob Kraft, I would say this: the three greatest coaching hires ever, Parcells to Pete Carroll to Bill Belichick. I don't know how you top that.
You know, it's funny because there's always a saying in New England: "In Bill we trust." And Bill is got a system, and he's tough, and he would call out Brady. And it's funny because you're an artist, you're a comedian, you're an actor. You need freedom.
Stretching it there, I'll go with that though. But all right.
But you need Judd Apatow's super smart, but Judd gives you the ability and the freedom to kind of, you know, see your way through perhaps what you're doing. Belichick doesn't give you.
He saw the Matt Castle that I was, and he built the offense around me.
But if Tom left Belichick, and there was this sense that Belichick wore his ass out, he was exhausted from it. If you had to pick.
Oh, my God. Are you going to go Real Housewives on me here?
Well, I'm saying.
You weren't in the locker room. You don't know what happened. Who did you talk to?
I'm American.
Some other guy who never played professional sports by the water cooler. You don't know what happened. How about this? How about Tom did everything he could to make the team win? He was constantly deferring money so we could get better players. He's at the end. How about he goes to the sunshine, doesn't deal with the winter at state taxes? He gave us six. I mean, anybody who's upset with that move, you're just a miserable person.
Well, let me ask you this, though. If I said...
Yeah, come up with another, I don't know what the hell, Real Housewives reason...
If,
you know what I heard? I heard he told me he had to pull up his socks.
You're talking.
Didn't like that.
You're talking to America's honesty broker. I got a lot of sources. Okay, so
I always love when somebody tells me how honest they are. You gonna sell me a car now, Colin?
If Belichick or Brady, only one can win a Super Bowl next 5 years. Who would you choose? Where's your loyalty?
I'll tell you, this is how much I love both of them. That's tough. I wouldn't want to make, that's like Sophie's choice. I want Tom to win so bad. I just want to hear how the Colts are going to cry on this one. And all of you guys in sports media, the way you backed out, the way you guys backed all their ridiculous complaining over the years is really shameful. But I also understand that it's a symptom of having a 24-hour news network now. You got to have something to talk about. But to be honest with you, I don't care. I think I would have cared before this pandemic, but at this point, I mean, I'm just happy sports are back. I'd like to see, obviously, I want to see both of them win again and prove to everybody who said that, you know, the ridiculous statements that Tom, he's a systems quarterback, he can plug anybody in, and people who, you know, just are constantly trying to come at Belichick because they can't figure out what he's doing, saying all kinds of horrible things about him. I hope they both, you know, I hope Tom wins one this year, we won next year. And then I just want to hear what all these just babies, these whiners are going to say. I got to tell you, all those years when Dan Marino's with the Dolphins and they would kick our ass down the Orange Bowl, they would always beat us. Like, I never said anything bad about the guy. I love Dan Marino. The guy, I mean, I love Derek Jeter. All of those guys broke my sports heart 1,000 times, but I would never sit there and talk negatively about them that they were doing something underhanded. It's like they beat you. You lost by 35.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah, that's true. So now that you're doing movies and you're a comedian and now you act, and you had a great – we talked during the break. This is smart because I'm not much of an actor guy, although I love movies. And I said, how – how do you act?
I don't like football, but I love football. All right.
How do you act? Tell me the answer you gave me, because I thought this was a really good answer. I said, how do you fake it? How do you pretend after being authentic on a stage for 30 years?
Well, thank you for giving me the nod that I haven't been full of S when I've been on stage. But no, it's just all I learned from watching a guy. Jeffrey Tambor is the guy I learned the most from on how to do comedy, where I would watch him on Larry Sanders. What made it funny was he wasn't trying to be funny. He just believed everything that he was saying. And that show was on at the same time I'd first gone down to New York. And I remember walking up the street on the Upper East Side and I saw this beginning of a bar fight spilled out onto the street. And there was these two guys squaring off, and I could tell that neither one of them wanted to fight. But neither one could back down because all their friends were watching. So they were terrified. But because I had no skin in the game, when I watched it, it was hilarious to me. But neither one of them were trying to be funny. But they're trying to be, like, tough when they were actually scared made it funny. And I remember it finally what Jeffrey Tambor was doing clicked to me when he would be upset on the show about not Hank, his character, not getting the respect he felt he deserved and being this second banana and sort of treated like this buffoon, not only by the public, but by the guys that he worked with. What made it funny was that he cared. He wasn't trying to be funny. He really just wanted to have this respect. And there's this great scene one time when he's yelling at Larry Sanders, and Rip Torn is actually listening on the answering machine. And the look of pain on his face when he discovers that, as he's pouring his heart out to Larry Sanders, that he's still a joke, was absolute. It was hilarious and heartbreaking all at the same time. So I feel like that's what I learned, and that's what I'm trying to do.
It's such a smart answer, isn't it? It's a really good answer.
Every once in a while, I get lucky, Colin.
So when's the last time you did a stand-up act? Because you can't go inside anymore. When's the last time?
March 10th. I opened for, I did a show with Dean Del Rey, great comic and former frontman for a rock band. And he loves Bon Scott, has like a tattoo of him, killer tattoo right on his side. And he did it was like 40 years since Bon Scott had passed. So he put together this comedy and tribute to Bon Scott AC/DC show. So me, Dean Del Rey and Mark Maron, going back, I forget who else was on the show. We did stand up first, and then a band came out with all these heavy hitters like Steve Gorman, Brad Wilk. Of course, I'm naming all the drummers. I'm a drum geek. There's all these amazing players, and we had like the greatest night ever. And then it was just over. I can't wait to get back on stage, though. I can tell you that.
King of Staten Island available, digital, Blu-ray, DVD, August 25th. So you don't like being called, what did I call you? You're the everyman of Boston, and you were offended by that because you grew up in the burbs.
No, so. You said I spoke for Boston. Yeah. And I'd like to go back there and actually be able to relax at some point so I can't accept that title.
It's great seeing you. Congrats on your success.
Well, by the way, I got to give a shout-out to a buddy of mine I just found out passed away literally 90 minutes ago, like one of the biggest – might be the biggest Patriots fans of all time. Wayne Previty, one of my great friends, rest in peace. Hilarious comedian and an even better friend. Absolutely heartbroken about that. So he was such a Patriots fan. I was joking with a buddy of mine. I think he couldn't bear to see Tom Brady in a Buccaneers jersey. So maybe that's why he checked out. I don't know. But love you forever, brother.
Good seeing you, Billy. I appreciate you coming on after that. Emotional day for you, and I appreciate it, man.
No worries. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
By the way, Big Ten football season has just been canceled. A lot of people going to lose their jobs. It's tough. Big Ten football season has officially been canceled. So they're going to try for spring football, which I think is doable. Urban Meyer doesn't like it. It's doable. So there you go. So my guess is the Pac-12 schedule. Pac-12's always been a little pious and precious. They will cancel in the next 24 hours. So, but the ACC, the Duke, the medical advisor for the ACC conference is a Duke doctor. And he said, you can play football. So the ACC and the SEC, where college football is really popular, they are all in on this so far. Big 12 will, I think Big 12. But I've said this before. Now, this was kind of our prediction that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 see themselves as very academic institutions. And the Ivy League canceled. And the Pac-12, I grew up out here, they see themselves as winner of the Sears Cup, our volleyball, our swimming matter. And the SEC, they're like, listen, we do football. We don't really care about anything else. And I don't think college football means as much out west. So I think the Big Ten season has been canceled. I think athletes are safer in athletic bubbles than not. It looks like it's going to be a year of pro sports, which, by the way, pro sports has always been more popular than college sports. NHL is more popular than college hockey. NFL is much more popular than college basketball. NBA gets much bigger ratings than college basketball. So pro sports are working, but pro sports have billionaire owners. And billionaire owners can write $25 million checks. I mean, this really comes down to a financial issue. So pro athletes are playing. Pro athletes are older than college athletes. And nobody 17, 18, and under is dying of COVID. So this is really, to me, if you say it's just, well, this is a health issue, my takeaway, well, then why are pro athletes doing it? Pro athletes are, there, a lot of pro athletes are 35 years old, 38. College athletes are 21. So you're basically saying in the NFL, because you can get all the testing in the bubbles, we feel good about it. But in college, where it's more semi-bubble, we don't feel good about it. And I contend this feels, to me, a lot like lawsuit fear, litigation concerns. Because the numbers tell you Michigan, Alabama, Ohio State, they're testing all day. Michigan's last 353 tests, they don't have a single positive. Their last 453 tests, they have one or two positives. So, I mean, the testing is showing you these bubbles, these college athletic bubbles, there are not a lot of positive tests. Really not. And by the way, what's interesting with the Big Ten is 13 Big Ten campuses are allowing students on, which is like, wait a minute, they don't have all these medical professionals around them like the athletes do. And the athletes are all being tested. Nick Saban said today, you could be tested every day if you want. We have people there. So they're saying, I guess what they're saying in the Big Ten is it's player safety. Well, 13 campuses are having kids. They don't have doctors around them. So my takeaway is, this is why I've said, Joey and I talked about this earlier. All this is so confusing to me. I mean, airplanes are packed. I was inside of a restaurant this weekend. That's okay. State to state, we don't have any protocols. I mean, California, you can't be in a restaurant. I was in Park City, Utah. I was in a restaurant. Beaches, go for it. I've said this before. I can't figure out why you can't have 10,000 people at a Phillies or a Dodgers game, but you can have people sitting next to each other in a restaurant. Indoors. Outdoors with a mask, no. Indoors, eating without a mask. And we know this travels very quickly with food. Like buffets are a nightmare, right? I don't have the answers to it, but I think we're just – and I talk a lot of NFL and NBA. As long as the NBA gives me a good playoff and the NFL plays, you know, I'm fine. But it is – I mean, we're kind of making it up as we go. Like, airlines are packed in a small tube for 6 hours. You went on a flight right next to somebody.
We're in management mode at this point in our society.
We're managing it.
We're managing it. This is a this comes down to a liability issue and a lack of leadership. There's no voice for college football. There's no commissioner. There's no one that was set to organize all of these different conferences, put together a safety protocol that all of those presidents of the colleges agreed to. It's just everyone was just doing their own thing.
If I'm a president of Michigan, I can let students on campus without taking tests weekly, but I can't let football players on campus taking literally, potentially, three tests a week. Well, they're banging into each other. You think college kids are not – you think they're all social distancing on a college campus and wearing masks?
They're also going to be in classrooms together, no? Isn't that the point of them coming into school?
So kids won't be intimate on campus. They won't party on campus. They won't – you got to be kidding me. These are college kids. So if it's safety, I don't buy the argument. If it's safety, why are airlines flying? I'm going to a restaurant
tonight.
Well,
it's safety, but it's safety paired with liability.
That's what it feels like to me. It feels like lawyers are running college football. People are petrified. By the way, medical professionals disagree. The advisor for the ACC, who's a Duke doctor, he went to med school and stuff. That matters. His opinion today is, yes, you can have football. Just constant testing, tracing, testing. It's fine. So that doctor says, yes, you can do it. I mean,
I'm really heartbroken for these athletes. It's I can't imagine how
can
they
you
feel.
Imagine all you're a fourth or a fifth year senior. Joe Burrow's story does not exist if he was a senior this year. Joe Burrow's life has been changed by last year of college football. He would have been a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
He's the number one pick in the draft. So if you don't think college sports changes lives, I mean, think about the opportunities college sports give to kids that don't have great financial wherewithal or backgrounds. It's a life – I've written about this in both my books. The idea – what college sports really does, it changes lives.
Yeah, well, we're not just speaking from a callous place of just want college sports. We have sports back. And these, I would love to see college football, there's a human element to this as well.
How about these college towns? This is their income in Auburn, Alabama. This is how they make Eugene, Oregon. This is this,